was virtually gone, and the shadows under the forest were almost impenetrably deep.
Can't see a thing.
Me neither. But I'm sure there's something trailing us. Closing in.
Trail ends ahead. We could wait up and check.
Ryan looked where the armorer pointed.
Good idea. Hide around the corner and look back. Might be an animal of some kind.
JB stared behind them again.
And again, Ryan. It might not. Stickies.
Fireblast.
Ryan shaded his eye, trying to make out numbers in the pallid light of the early dawn.
Big gang.
Close on 20. Enough to scatter into the woods and give us a hard time if we screw up an ambush on them. They look spread out as well. Not a nice compact unit we could easily sweep.
Best steps are long ones. Go hard for a half hour or so and build up a lead. Then we try and find a place to hole up in the trees and brush. And hope they miss us.
The bend in the trail hid them from the pursuers. They were about 600 yards behind them, moving steadily, snouts down, like hunting dogs. The track snaked back to only 50 yards ahead. Ryan dove into the shadows on the left, followed instantly by JB. On the next straight stretch, less than a quarter mile in front of them, was another large gang of stickies, coming their way.
Have to hide. No choice. They'd see us any way we run.
They'll be on top of us, from both directions, in less than 2 minutes.
JB had the 9mm Uzi unslung, ready in his hand, while Ryan had his index finger on the trigger of the Steyr. There was already enough daylight for him not to need the Starlight nightscope, but the rifle wasn't much of a weapon for the close-range ambush of a numerically superior force. His mind was racing. On every side was the featureless forest that had been surrounding them ever since they'd been dropped off the Golden Eagle. Apart from the narrow trails that occasionally meandered off to one side or the other, the forest was unbroken and largely impenetrable. With the light increasing every moment, it would be far more difficult to simply lie still in the shadows and hope that the stickies went by. There was a long-standing body of strong rumor that the muties were able to scent out human prey with their snuffling noses.
Get in deep, back to back. Maybe they'll miss us. If not, then we fight.
If I had a better plan, then I'd tell you. Let's do it.
As they darted off the side of the track, Ryan's boots slipped in loose earth near the broken end of a fallen ponderosa pine. He lay on the dirt for a moment, shaken by the heavy fall, his fingers brushing a bunch of thin, stiff twigs that protruded from the leaf mold. Thin, stiff, metallic twigs.
Fuck.
You all right?
Don't move, John.
What?
Mines. I got my hand on one.
Where?
JB's eyes narrowed behind the lenses, peering at Ryan's spread fingers and the tiny antennas that protruded between them.
Darn night.
Dirt's been dug over. Must be all around us. There's several trails going off from here. That's why they picked it to seed the mines. One wrong move.
In a few seconds, the stickies would be around both corners, virtually on top of them. JB acted fast, drawing his long-bladed knife, cutting quickly beneath the anti-personnel mine that lay under Ryan's hand.
Keep your fingers still.
He revealed the dark gray circular metal shape. It was about 8 inches across, with a delicate contact on the top, packed with high X and lethal frags. As soon as the armorer had it free, Ryan jumped to his feet, snatching the Uzi from the dirt, while JB picked up the mine in both hands, holding it out in front of him, like a mother with a babe in a soiled diaper.
What shall I...
Throw it on the track, quick!
It was a clumsy, heavy thing to dispose of easily. Ryan watched his companion as he swung it awkwardly around, like an amateur discus thrower, releasing it in a shallow arc toward the sharp bend in the path.
Down!
As he hurled himself down, he glimpsed the first of the gang of stickies out of the corner of his eye, walking along the narrow track from the north. They stopped as the metal disc floated toward them. The blast picked Ryan up and rolled him over twice, covering him with loose dirt and leaves. He knew that JB had been just behind him, but for the first few seconds he was so disoriented that he couldn't work out where his friend was. There was a crimson rain all around the immediate blast area, spotting on Ryan's clothes, hands, and face. At his side, Ryan was aware of JB struggling to his knees, glasses hanging crookedly from his blood-patched face, his hat lying in the dirt near his feet.
Ace on the line. Best finish him off now.
Now that the explosion was over, Ryan realized that there had been a real danger of the concussion triggering off a chain reaction among any of the other landmines buried close by them. So far, they'd been lucky. Ryan stood, able for the first time to appreciate the scale of the carnage. The mine had been pitched right at the feet of one of the gangs of advancing stickies. From the torn relics of mutated humanity, it seemed that there might have been close to a dozen of them. but it would take a careful computation of the amputated legs, hands, and other assorted ragged limbs to try to match them to headless trunks and faceless skulls. On one side, where the force of the explosion had been most powerful, it looked as though someone had taken the contents of a butcher shop and heaved them into the splintered lower branches of the pines. It didn't bear much resemblance to anything that had once been vaguely humanoid, just lengths of ragged cloth and raw meat. The group of stickies that had been trailing Ryan and the armorer had been just far enough back to be spared from the force of the landmine's blast. They had come lumbering forward, standing and staring at the scene of the massacre with a brutish lack of comprehension, their hands at their sides, roomy eyes wide in curious dismay. One or two of their wounded companions had managed to get to their feet. One was blinded, a great flap of skin hanging down from his forehead over the top part of his face, revealing the glistening expanse of smeared bone beneath. Another was clutching a jagged spike of resinous wood that had been driven clean through his lower stomach, spilling his guts into the trampled mud around his bare feet. Ryan made himself a lightning summary of the initial butcher's bill. 6 or 7 dead, roughly the same number critically injured, 1 or 2 recovering from unconsciousness, and about 10 in the second hapless group. Ryan left the Steyr in the dirt, drawing the Sig Sauer from its holster, wincing as he rubbed away a gobbet of bloody flesh from the butt.
Let him have it, and watch where you're putting your feet.
But before they could open fire, the blinded Sticky tottered across the path, his hands groping at the sulfurous smoky air, stumbling in among the torn trees on the far side of the narrow hunting trail.
Fire blast!
Ryan turned away and threw himself face down in the dirt, immediately followed by JB, who had only just picked up his fedora. This time, the two men were marginally better prepared for it, cupping their hands over their ears, closing their eyes and keeping their mouths open to absorb the pressure from the landmine. As Ryan rolled back onto his hands and knees, leveling the Sig Sauer, he realized that there were virtually no targets left standing. The ground was a rolling mass of torn, blood-sodden flesh and smashed bones. In the middle of the carnage, a single Sticky stood, miraculously unharmed. His clothing was even more torn than it had been before, and his body streamed with blood. But it was the blood of others. His hands were in front of his face, making feeble, fluttering movements, as though he were trying to drive away an invisible cloud of tiny moths.
Dark night.
Let's get out. If there's any of the bastards still left alive in the woods, those explosions will bring them running.
Sure will. Nothing attracts a Sticky more than a big bang, unless it's 2 big bangs.
The air was filled with a cloying metallic stench of spilled blood. Ryan leveled the automatic at the single unharmed mutie, hesitating with his finger taut on the trigger, shaking his head as the stunned creature slowly turned his face and stared blankly at him.
Do it. 1 more or less doesn't make a difference.
Yeah. Kind of like killing the guy who just won the lottery. I can't help wondering whether there's a bigger gang of muties roaming around the woods. They have to be runners from the fortress of Wolfram and the Magus.
Yes, so.
They walked together north toward the fortress of Wolfram and the Magus, leaving behind the place of death and all the still bloody corpses. Christy and the others had been escorted back to their cells after breakfast, with the bright dawn promising a fresh day, the sun climbing cheerfully from the eastern sky. The Magus accompanied them, leaving his fat companion to pick alone at the remains of the meal. Christy and Mildred walked into their room.
Enjoy your time. Soon Ryan and J.B. Dix will be making their attempt to rescue you.
I thought you reckoned the Stickies might have gotten them. You changed your mind already?
Oh, I never underestimate my enemy.
Especially when it's Ryan Cotter and J.B. Dix coming after you.
Doc's face appeared at the slatted window of the nearby hut he had already been locked into.
Getting a chill around the heart, Magus?
No, not at all. They might come here soon, but they will fail, and we shall have our victory. And you might have your liberty.
Liberty? Scum like you would not know the meaning of the word.
The steel eyes stared incuriously at Doc.
And you would know?
Your kind of liberty? Surely. Count Mirabeau said, during the height of the terror and the French Revolution, that liberty was a whore who fucked on a mattress of corpses. That's your kind of liberty, Magus.
You think so?
I know so. For men like you and Wolfram, who live by the knout and the blade and the gun, there is no other kind of freedom.
Words are cheap, Dr. Tanner.
You will not think so when Ryan spits in your open eyes, Magus.